welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host, and our guest author is Father Robert McTague, S.J., author of two books, Real Philosophy for Real People and Christendom Lost and Found, both published by our friends over at Ignatius Press and naturally available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. It's a pleasure meeting you, Father.
Likewise, glad to be here.
People would recognize having seen you on with Father Mitch,
yes.
Another wonderful Jesuit.
Good morning.
And of course, you're good friends with, in fact, there's in one of the books, there's actually a chapter written by our good friend here at EWTN, Father Robert Spitzer.
That's right. I owe a great deal of gratitude to Father Spitzer. He helped me to find my vocation in the Society of Jesus.
So where are you from originally?
New Jersey.
You're in New Jersey?
Yeah.
Okay. And how'd you get into doing radio, let alone writing books?
This was not what I expected. I'm an introvert. I grew up as a very shy kid with a speech impediment, so I never thought I'd be doing this.
You're the John Stossel of Catholicism.
Well, I've been called a lot of things. I was in Buffalo visiting the Carmelite Monastery. They're helping with masses. And I met a fellow named Jim Wright, who's the president of the Station
sure.
of the Cross.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have an evening call-in program called Calling All Catholics. He said, we got an open spot for Thursday. Give it a try. I tried it. I seemed to like it. He thought I was good at it. Mm-hmm. And he said, we're starting a new show called The Catholic Current. We'd like you to be the full-time host. And so it was just this week. It's right. 6 years I've been on the air, and Jim Wright has been a good friend to me.
Right, absolutely, and a great friend to Mother Angelica and the network
yes.
over the years. Now, this particular book, Real Philosophy for Real People, Tools for Truthful Living. This is the one, in fact, that Father Robert Spitzer wrote the afterword in.
Yes.
In the beginning of it, you have philosophers let theories get in the way of what they and everyone else know. That's Paul Weiss.
Yes.
Who's reasonably important.
Yes.
And it's one thing to not see the forest for the trees, but then go on to deny the reality of the forest is a more serious matter. Why did you put those two at the top?
Well, my mentor, Paul Weiss, said that the real test of a philosophy is, can it be lived?
Mm-hmm.
I said, no one is really a consistent moral relativist. I mean, the people who say, there's nothing to know in the world, it's all a projection, it's all make-believe. I say, you go up to him and whisper, dude, your fly's open. If he looks, he's a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, the people who say, you know, there's no such thing as right or wrong, they also know who to call if their check is late
mm-hmm.
from the HR department. So you have philosophy should be about encountering the real so that you can live properly in accordance with the real. And philosophers say there's no such thing except whatever that is, and yet they also say they love their children. You can't do both.
Mm.
So rather than just spinning word fog, let's use the tools of the great minds of the path to make our way forward today.
Now, right at the beginning, you start off with a parable with Al and Fred having a discussion, and Fred at one time says, and yet to turn to these philosophy texts, which are on your own account, have a worse track record than tabloid diet suggestions. What do you mean?
Well, you know, the full name of Al was Al E. Quis, which is a Latin for aliquis, which means anyone. So he's the everyman.
Okay.
And the Fred he's talking to, of course, is Friedrich Nietzsche. If you take a look at the history of philosophy, it's in many ways a long, sad story of conceits and blatherings and so
mm-hmm.
on. But, you know, it's better than doing real work and having a real job. And it is just word salad. And yet, there are great minds who produce great tools that can help us to know what's real, what's human, and what's good.
Mm-hmm.
So philosophy has a bad reputation, which it has well earned in many circles,
mm-hmm.
but I say it doesn't have to be that way. The great books that I've read and the great people who taught me how to teach young people to navigate their way. So that's why there's a
mm-hmm.
toolbox on the cover. This is your portable Swiss Army knife.
Right.
So that when you meet a philosophical challenge, you can meet it in the field.
Right. You say, if you want guidance and morality, just ask yourself before acting, what is the loving thing to do? This is about as reliable as any other attempt at a moral theory, and it is a lot more concise.
Well, yes, that is the representation of Joseph Fletcher's so-called new morality from the 1960s, which was just relativism
mm-hmm.
in a new guise.
Mm-hmm.
And when they said to him, hey, it's hollow, give us something, he said, yeah, love. Okay, you know, all our friends running around with a bumper sticker that says love is love, and I said, well, yeah, only to the degree that it's love. You haven't told me what that is yet.
Mm-hmm.
People don't like thinking. Thinking is hard, so
right.
they look for slogans.
Right.
And if you don't like thinking, but you want to put in a little effort, you find an ideology. I want to break through the crust of all that verbal nonsense mm-hmm. and say, we can know what's real, we can know what's human, we can know what's good, we can act accordingly.
So is all this jargoning just a pretense?
Oh, it can be. Mm-hmm. It can be. It's you know, you think of the devotees of Heidegger. Nobody knows what Heidegger really means. And I know there are academics out there who would scream. I once had a copy of Heidegger's book, Being in Reality, and is in my car, and Paul Weiss saw it. And he said, if you understand that book, you're doing better than God, because God doesn't know what that means.
Didn't the Nazis understand that?
They seem to like it for some reason.
Yeah.
So I think that, it you know, rather than reading 900 pages of Bethel Garble and Heidegger's Being in Time, let's take tools to find the truth. There's going to be morally difficult situations, and rather than just flipping the coin, mm-hmm. we can think it through.
So the father answering in the preface that how your best way to get experience is making bad decisions isn't really the right answer.
No. This is a textbook, but there's jocularity. Effectively, what that book is a transcript of how I would lecture to the students. This is all battle-tested, 20-plus years mm-hmm. in the classrooms. And I would tell the students, you're 18, 19 years old, people want to hurt you and eat your soul. You can be an anti-relativist ninja mm-hmm. if you read this
especially
book.
If you bring this as your Swiss Army knife.
Well, yes, exactly. Yeah.
You say the meaning of human flourishing has been disputed since humans began disputing.
Yes. Well, because thinking is hard. Thomas Aquinas asks, why did God reveal things that the human mind can know on its own? For example, do good and avoid evil. God is real. Because thinking is hard. It's hard to do well. And most people don't have the time and the energy. But rather than just learning from the school of hard knocks, which mm-hmm. can be hard, let's learn how to think things through, learn how to see things clearly. Mm-hmm. I would give my students an exercise called the daily depredation. Mm-hmm. Take a news story, takes a speech from a politician. I said, take a few minutes, read it through, tell me what's wrong with it. And we'd go through, and I said, now, I'm going to go through it line by line, word by word, and show you everything that you missed. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, they would develop the critical eye. Mm-hmm. They would get so I said, if you ever read or hear something, you say, that's not quite right, but I can't put my finger on it, mm-hmm. this is the book that will teach you how to put your finger on it.
Okay. It's interesting, too, because one of the things you point out is that famous statement by Justice Kennedy. Why did you include that?
That little bit of fortune cookie from Supreme Court jurisprudence
right.
that basically says, you know, at the heart of liberty is the right to generate the meaning of life, the universe, and everything. What if I exercise my liberty to declare, you know, I'm Pooh Bah Napoleon, mm-hmm. and everyone has to bow down to me? Mm-hmm. He doesn't have an argument against that. That was just a poetic way of saying, I have nothing to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to give people license rather than liberty to do whatever the heck they want. A prominent Catholic law school, which I will not name, gave him an award for being a champion of human rights.
Well, he was Catholic, wasn't he?
He was baptized, yes, he certainly was.
Right. Well, unfortunately, when you count the Catholics in the United States, I think that's what a lot of them are counted as.
Right.
The world we now live in is a mess, both intellectually and morally. There seems to be little on which we can all agree. We see that even this past summer with the elections and the stark differences.
Right.
And people not only disagreeing, but having their complete other set of facts and realities they're living in.
Right. And look, there are people who want to sell you something. Mm-hmm. There are people who want to appeal to the worst elements of human nature. And this book can boost up your cognitive immune system so that you can not only detect lies, you can refute them and then make a case for the truth.
Right. So how much did you learn from your Italian grandfather?
Oh, Guido Formisano, God bless him. He was a sage of his time. And one of his laments was, he'd say, I talk and I talk and nobody understands. That's, you know, most people are like, most men are leading lives of quiet desperation. Look at the deaths of despair mm-hmm. among our young people, because no one understands. The other very wise thing my grandfather said was always leave the house with a full belly, because you never know when you're going to eat again.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say the forms of philosophy that are most common today seem to have little to contribute to a project of human flourishing.
Yes.
The problem my mentor Paul Weiss told me frequently is that philosophers let theories get in the way of what they and everybody else know.
Right, right. So you come up with a general theory of life, the universe, and everything. What the cool kids are doing now is you have your grievance. So if, you know, you have your grievance because of your ethnicity, your sex, your this, your that, and your other, and you check off the boxes, and then you're going to give, you know, my perspective on baseball from the perspective of a man who wears glasses and appears on television, and no one can gainsay me because I'm speaking from my lived experience. Mm-hmm. And if you disagree with me, you're a hater. Right. Well, eventually you end up with Welcome to the Jungle there. And so rather than that kind of nonsense, I say, no, reality can be found. And it can be acted on well in a way that does lead to human flourishing. And if you think that project isn't worth the effort, where are all the happy people who are living as relativists?
Right.
All the people who have no moral boundaries, they're killing themselves.
So was Paul Weiss actually killed by a lion?
That was a wonderful story that he told to illustrate that. He says, a man comes back from a safari in Africa, and he tells his friends that I was in a clearing in the jungle, and before me there were lions, behind me there were lions, to the left of me there were tigers, to the right of me there were tigers. And someone said, what did you do? And he goes, what could I do? I was killed. Mm-hmm. So if I invite you, please come to Father McTague's talk about why there is no reality, RSVP by April 5th at noon, valet parking available. Mm-hmm. That's nonsense. Mm-hmm. That's nonsense. And most people are just trying to make a nice living on the nonsense.
Right. You say, my intent is to put together a set of philosophical tools to help one to know what one should know and to do what one should do.
Yes.
And to face challenges and contradictions when, as they occur across the miles and the years I've met and heard of and read about many people who say something like, I read slash saw slash heard something the other day and it seemed not right to me.
Right. This is the nonsense detector. Mm. And most people say, gosh, I don't have time for that. This doesn't pass the smell test. There are actually a relatively limited number of ways of being wrong. Mm-hmm. This is the catalog of the different ways of being wrong. And so you can begin to name and say, oh, he's got a materialist metaphysics. He's got a reductionist anthropology. He's got a relativist ethics. This is why it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Here's the alternative.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's about assembly. There's this word here that you use already from the beginning of the chapter, which has something to do with IFF, identify friend or foe. And that word is solertia?
Solertia.
Solertia.
That is one of my favorite words. It is a subset of prudence. Translated as sagacity, it's not really adequate. It's the ability to think on your feet. It's the ability to be objective even when you're taken by surprise. Quick illustration. Mm-hmm. A colleague of mine was a classical violinist, and she was at an outdoor concert where her brothers were playing Irish fiddle music. And they just dragged her on the stage and handed her a fiddle, and she jammed. How did she do that? Because she knew the instrument, and she knew mm-hmm. music, and she knew the audience. So on her feet, she knew the basics so well that even in an unprepared situation, she could meet the challenge. Mm-hmm. She could rise to the level of the occasion because of the training she had invested in. And that's what I offer in that book.
Well, what's wrong with being an intellectual archaeologist?
There's a place for them. Mm-hmm. Some of my best friends and most of my teachers were there. But they're just curators mm-hmm. of ideas, and it doesn't connect with how should I live. You know, the great questions of Kant, what can I know, how should I live, what may I hope for. Lying awake at night worrying about whether or not everyone is a universal hylomorphist or not isn't compelling. It doesn't bake bread, and mm-hmm. it doesn't provide moral guidance.
Right. You talk about something called memoria, allows us to draw upon the past, our own and that of our forebears, to recall the cautionary tales. You quote the use of this by Peter Kraft, mm-hmm. and the book is not just me, it's 90% unoriginal.
Right.
That's what makes it different.
Yes. We have this idea that we are fascinating selves, and so art is creativity. There's no craftsmanship. There's no apprenticeship. I'm Bob McTague from Newark, New Jersey. I'm nobody. I'm a sinner. No one should care what I have to say. I have stood on the shoulders of giants. I've read great books with great men. Mm-hmm. And the Society of Jesus has sent me around the world bring all that together, distill it in a format that people can put to use. If you're looking for that, then that's the book for you.
So where does docility come in?
Docilitas, docility, we tend to think of it in American English connotatively as mere passivity. That's
right.
It's the ability to be taught. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the reasons I realized maybe I need to take a step from teaching was that I'd interrupt the lecture and observe to the students, you know, this is the part where you write down what I say. Mm-hmm. And at first they'd look at me in bewilderment and later in indignation. They did not have docilitas. They did not have ears to hear or eyes to see.
I just expected they expected a handout or they were going to send them a file.
But not so much, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now, you talk about the idea, be prepared or be surprised.
Right.
What does that mean?
Beginning of every semester, some 18-year-old kid, drawing upon the fullness of his years and all of his erudition, would point out the window and say, you know, Father, in the real world. Mm. I said, no. The real world is an honorific. What we do in the classroom with virtue and truth, that's the real world. Out there is the realm of common experience where people want to hurt your loved one and eat your soul. Yeah. And they're going to offer you seductions and addictions you are not prepared to respond to. Mm. Or you can pay attention and learn from this book. And that's what I mean, be prepared to be surprised.
Are you a fan of Louis Armstrong?
Well, he did say, you know, I say to myself, what a wonderful world.
Right.
And you know, Aquinas said that the philosopher is like the poet in this way, both are concerned with the marvelous, with wonder. Aristotle said philosophy begins in wonder. When I was a little boy in Newark, New Jersey, I found myself saying, this can't be all that there is. When I was in doctoral...
That's a Peggy Lee song.
Well, yes. And then in doctoral studies, while I was in business, I used to call up Father Spitzer and say, this can't be it. This can't be all that there is. And he introduced me to St. Ignatius. So if you realize, if you suspect that you've been asked to just stay on the surface your whole life and that's leaving you empty, this is a way to learn how to go deeper.
So what is the combination of the thinking in four directions with something called the ethical wedding cake?
Okay, these are the two key concepts. A statement doesn't exist in a vacuum. For example, you know, abortion is murder. All right, if that's true, what makes it be true? What are the conditions of possibility for that being true? If that is true, what are the consequences? What follows from it? If it's true that abortion is murder, then these things are required, these are forbidden, these are optional. What are the supports for this? What are testimony, expert experience, et cetera, et cetera? And then you have to be honest, you have to look at the objections. Most people are very glib and facile at cherry picking the data, but they don't answer the objections. Aquinas always started off with his opponent's best arguments. So when you say abortion is murder, then you got to say, well, there must be something really important about human dignity. If killing the unborn is wrong, we have to have a very hard look at in vitro fertilization. I'm looking at you, Senator Cruz. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that would be a direction. And then in terms of the ethical
wedding...
Of course,
when you can't convince Catholics, quote unquote, that pro-choice is the same thing as pro-abortion, that's a bigger problem.
Well, yes. So and regarding the ethical wedding cake, very briefly, you have reality studied by metaphysics. And the metaphysics you have can give rise to your anthropology. So if I say the only thing that's real is matter, then I can't talk about human beings having a soul. Mm. If I talk about human beings having a soul, then there has to be something that's real, that's not material. And then if I'm a composite of body and soul, then how I live and how I use my body matters morally. So whenever you make a moral claim, that claim reaches out in the four directions, and it entails an ethical theory, an anthropology, and a metaphysics.
Okay, that's Real Philosophy for Real People, Tools for Truth and Living. There's another book, Christendom Lost and Found, Meditation for a Post-Post-Christian Era.
Right.
What's a post-post-Christian era?
I'm glad you asked that, because most people who interview me leave out one of the posts.
Right.
Okay, what's the post-Christian era? Let's go back to 1789, French Revolution. France, once known as the eldest daughter of the church, says, got a great idea. Let's live our public and private lives without Christ. It's gonna be awesome. And we ended up with a lot of bad art and a lot of dead bodies.
Right.
All right. And the history of the 20th century is the kinetic convulsions of trying to live without Christ. And here we are in the 21st century where, you know, modernism is exhausted, postmodernism is ridiculous. Say, hey, can we admit that we messed up and we have to have Christ planted again in the soil of our here and now without getting nostalgic about some good old days.
Which never existed.
Would never since the fall.
Right.
There's
right.
never been a good old days. There's never
Which
been a golden era. There's always been sinners. Yeah.
Right.
But there was a time when Catholics knew how to make great art and great saints mm-hmm. and great civilizations. We need to start right. doing that again while there's still time.
So who was John Sr. and why did you, he's not your senior, that's his name,
well,
John
Sr., that, yeah,
right?
He's not to say, I have a special appreciation for curmudgeons. John mm-hmm. Sr. was a curmudgeon, man of letters, a convert, a traditionalist, and he wrote a book in the late 70s called The Death of Christian Culture. Mm-hmm. And his diagnosis was brilliant. And then he, a couple years later, had a sequel called The Restoration of Christian Culture. So modernism killed Christian culture. The way to bring it back is we need to recover Ora et Labora, a work in prayer, from Saint Benedict. And then we need to recover the language of love from Our Lady.
Right. I was a little disappointed initially when you were supporting John Sr. Against Malcolm Muggeridge, but it seemed like at the end you were kind of saying they both are coming at it just from different perspectives.
From very different perspectives. So from Malcolm Muggeridge, great learned man of prayer, Christendom was a dirty word. Mm-hmm. It was the business of churchianity. It was the status quo ordo. It's, you know, Herod making the deal with the Pharisees and with Pilate. Mm-hmm. And that's all true. And whenever the church has done that, it's always ended badly. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, for John Sr., Christendom was the fruitful intersection of nature and mm-hmm. grace. This was baptizing not only Catholic individuals, but Catholic communities, cultures, and civilizations. And there was a glorious flourishing rooted in Jerusalem, Athens, and Rome, but then meant for everyone everywhere in all times.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about Aquinas in the last book and in this book as well, mm-hmm. but you also say Augustine is more personal and meditative. Do you like him better?
It depends on what which is better, a hammer or a saw? Well, it depends on the work that you're doing. Yeah.
Okay.
So for Aquinas, if I want to know how to lay things out neatly, then Aquinas is your guy. Now, that's not to say he couldn't write poetry, because he certainly did. And Augustine can certainly be rigorous and systematic. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking more of the Confessions and the city. I mean, the city of God, Rome has fallen. The world is coming to an end. The Vandals are at the gates right. of his own city. I started writing that in November of 2019, saying, this isn't working. This life without Christ isn't working. And then what happens next? COVID
shows up.
And then the riots.
Right.
So I kind of, at the risk of appearing to put myself in good company, I said, I feel like the Vandals are at the gates, and I got to write something down so that whoever survives me will say, this is how you keep the lights on.
Now, in the beginning of this, you also have an interesting quiz. True or false, hey, hey, ho, ho, Weston Sieves got to go, and you asked where it came. Was that, I remember from Berkeley.
Well, that was from Berkeley. Yeah,
right.
that was
so,
from Berkeley.
So why did you stick that at the beginning?
Well, because if nowadays, you know, Western civilization, the very phrase, you know, you have to say it and then spit because it's bad because it involved men, it involved white men, it involved Christianity, it involved heterosexuals. All of those are bad. None of the cool kids like them.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, but the very fact that you can have this conversation in peace, freedom, and safety is a testimony to the truths of Western civilization, which, of course, is undeniably rooted in Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about in this book, you say that you decided to write it more or less freestyle.
Right.
What do you mean?
Well, the previous book, Real Philosophy, Real People, that was Bach.
Mm-hmm.
That was disciplined. That was measured. It took me entirely too long to write because I let the best be the enemy of the good. And Father Fessio paid me a great compliment, which is also a criticism. He said there's not a single sentence out of place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. All glory and honor to God. Mm-hmm. It's seamless. I didn't want a book to take me that long, and I didn't want to be that exhausted at the end. Okay. So I said, well, let's try an entirely different method. So I got a big fat journal of very thin Japanese paper. I got a fountain pen. I said, I'm going to write today until I'm done, and then the next day I'll write again, and I'm not even going to look at the journal until I finish it. And so, in God's providence, it became a kind of a war journal or a plague journal, if you will.
During that period of time.
Right.
Just before we go, so many members of the church today do not know what they do not know. And for the most part, they do not even know what they think they know. They have so little sense of their heritage, their resources, their opportunities, or their high calling.
For example, Easter Sunday, you know, you're offering Mass at St. Typical's, and there's a lot of unfamiliar faces. So before you distribute Holy Communion, you do a quick review of how to receive Holy Communion, and then you talk about who may receive Holy Communion. And one of the things I mentioned is you have to be in a marriage recognized by the Church. And then people will get in my face, that's not true. I've been Catholic my whole life. I've never heard of that. And I would just say, I believe you.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I think we're suffering from a kind of institutional amnesia that doesn't serve us well.
Right. Absolutely. But if you pick up these books, you'll be served well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
A pleasure.
Father Robert McTagg, S.J., and two books, the one we just finished talking about is Christendom, Lost and Found, Meditations for a Post-Christian Era. That's what we're in. And, of course, his first book, Real Philosophy for Real People, easily readable, Tools for Truthful Living, with a powerful afterword by our good friend, Father Robert Spitzer. Both books available through the EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com. This has been Bookmark. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.